Bill Osmond in The Sixth Sense, ladies and gentlemen. M. Night Shyamalan's first foray into directing, the big leagues of directing. Do that because this is an M. Night Shyamalan episode. This is episode 17 of Go Watch a Movie. I'm Kelvin.
And I'm Robert.
We are a movie discussion podcast where we talk movies. As I mentioned just a little bit ago, this is an M. Night Shyamalan episode. We watched The Visit and Split. And I'm going to take this time. That's for you, James McAvoy. You deserve that. But we'll get there. Gonna go ahead and start things with. I'm gonna change the name of movie news and entertainment news to entertainment news last week, because this is all news that came out last week and it normally is, and people may have heard it already, but we come out on Sundays, so it's a little hard to keep up with that stuff. But entertainment news last week. First off, this is something that gave me joy. Disney has finally confirmed by putting out a little video that all the Pixar movies are connected. Dinosaurs, Cars, The Incredibles, Monsters, Inc., all of that. It's all in the same universe. Hmm. Yeah, and WALL-E, they put out a video linking everything. I may put a link to that video on the description for this episode. But yeah, they're all one big happy universe, which I think is super cool. Have you seen that at all?
I have not seen that.
There's a thing called the Pixar theory that people have been talking about for the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years. And yeah, it was never confirmed by them, but Disney finally is like, yep, it is. And they show clips of how everything is connected. Hmm. Yep. And since this is an M. Night Shyamalan episode, he wants to direct an episode of Stranger Things. I'm not sure, just one episode, but he wants to do it. I have not seen that show yet. Have you watched that one yet?
I've watched it all.
Yeah, well, you think it's his style?
I don't know. Well, yes and no. I mean, I don't really see M. Night when I watch Stranger Things, but I guess he could tackle it and make it his own. Not the way he's done other things, like Avatar, but
yeah,
I could see it, but I don't think it's necessary.
That one show out, which I actually liked, I can't think of it right now, where the city's walled in, and it has I'm not gonna struggle for that, but anyway, yeah, he's tackled TV before, but yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put it past him, you know, if he does one or two episodes of the next season, you know.
Yeah, I can see him doing one or two, I don't know, I hope he's not taking it over, but
yeah. The last bit today, James Cameron wants to return to the Terminator franchise because he did 1 and 2, which were of course the best of the franchise, 2 being the best in my opinion of all.
I agree.
And then he stepped aside and lost, I guess the rights went to someone else, but he gets the rights back in 2019, and he's going to team up with Tim Miller, and they say they don't know if he's going to reboot. Because they say he definitely doesn't want to start after Genesis, but he wants to reboot and conclude the Terminator franchise. So that could mean one more movie, maybe 2 more. Maybe he'll pick up right after T2. Mm-hmm. But I, as a fan of this franchise, good or bad, I am looking forward to see what he does with that. Because Terminator 2, like I said, is just an amazing, amazing movie. but yeah, that was entertainment news last week. Which will bring us to our first film, The Visit.
The Visit.
And, yeah, so I had not seen this.
You have an overall impression? Was it a yay or was it a nay for you? An overall yay or an overall nay?
It was a overall yay. It wasn't your standard M. Night.
No.
It was very unexpected.
That's why I think it was good.
Yes. Yeah. So in that instance, it was the M. Night back to form, back to his original form of that unexpectedness. And you're like, whoa, it catches you off guard. But this one was done completely different from every other M. Night movie I've seen. So I enjoyed it a lot. It's Olivia DeGeorge, Ed Oxbild, Dina Dungan, Catherine Hahn, Peter McRobbie. Those were the main five characters, but yeah, and written and directed by M. Night. Like I groaned a bit when I saw that it was being done by, you know, the found footage style shaky.
Yeah, hand. I know that's been overdone,
but this one I think did it right. Mm-hmm. The premises, these two kids live with their mom, their single mom, and she's upset. She's always sad and everything like that. She has unfinished, but she's on bad terms with her parents. She hasn't talked to them since she was 19 years old. She ran away after an incident happened. So the grandparents get in touch with them, or they get in touch with their grandparents? I think their grandparents get in touch with them.
Yeah, grandparents get in touch with them.
And they want to finally meet their two grandkids who they have not ever met. The mom says okay, reluctantly. And the daughter decides to document this whole thing for her mother, a little documentarian. And they get on the train and go meet their grandparents. And the not hilarities ensue. Because, wow. Yeah, they get there and they meet their grandparents. And once again, we are a movie discussion podcast, so things will be spoiled. But these are crazy motherfuckers. these old people that they meet, we found out later, spoilers, that they are not in fact their grandparents. They have murdered their grandparents. Their grandparents have been volunteering at a psych ward. Yep. For a old folks psych ward, or just a general psych ward?
I think it was just a general one. Yeah. Well, it might have even been a psych ward, because one of the people was a druggie or whatever.
Yeah, just like rehab. A rehab clinic, and I guess it has a psych wing. Mm-hmm. Shady Meadows?
Something like that.
And yeah, so I guess they have been telling these two old people that our grandkids are so great, we hear all about them, they'll be visiting us soon. And they didn't like that.
Yeah. Grandpa mentioned that the old woman had killed her kids or something. Mm-hmm. Put them in a suitcase and put them in a pond. So that was cruel to flaunt their grandkids in front of her, so he's like, we're gonna get them.
And boy do they. I like the leads. I could have done without the rapping. So the siblings, the kids, the daughter is the one who's filming. She's the older of the two. And then you have Tyler. T Diamond Stylus. For whatever reason, this little kid to be a rapper. And he's not good. Yeah. he's trying his little hardest, and he loves the ladies, and the ladies love him, and he's always repping. And oh, I guess he does like three or four times, but I, like Robert said, it's just so funny to think of M. Night writing this scene of it's like, so first he has to get the idea in his head, I want someone in this movie to rap. Then he has to get the idea in his head, I want a kid in this movie to rap. Now, what would a kid sound like rapping? So he's going to sit down and write a rap.
You can't really criticize a kid too much, because this is basically M. Night.
Exactly. And the kid has kind of a lisp, so it's kind of awkward. And this, yeah. But that's just a side note of this great little story. What do you think? You showed this to me. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I liked the movie. Yeah. I thought it was great. And the reason why I thought it was great, I think you already kind of hit on it, was that it was so unlike his other movies. I think M. Night's already carved himself a niche. Mm-hmm. Where you're going to expect the same thing from his movies. You're going to expect that big thing at the end. So, yeah, this one, it's had a big thing at the end, but it wasn't as big as you thought it was going to be. It was almost simplified. It wasn't over the top. It was under the top.
And
it was perfect. I thought they did a really good job with it. So yeah, that's my main reason for liking this movie.
So yeah, and I thought it was, like I said, even though it's hand cam shot, they did it in a good way. Like they even at one point introduced another cam to get different perspectives from this, and it's old people were amazing. After So these kids, they get to their grandparents, quote unquote, grandparents' house, and the grandparents announce, "We're old. At 9:30, you have to go to bed." And there's a reason for this. Was it sundown?
Sundown, yeah.
Sundown dementia this old lady has. So after 9:30, her brain just flips, and she is like the Ring girl come to life, right, crawling around the house and just scratching walls and gets murderous. And they witness this kind of briefly in question. And oh, the first time we see her,
is it butt naked?
She's walking down underneath the house,
at the bottom of the
stairs. There's that too.
Oh
my god, walking past the stairwell. She does it about 3 times, projectile vomits, and yeah, it's just weird. And he tells her she has a stomach flu. And then Robert mentioned the under the stairs. This lady is in a crawl space, galloping like a freaking little pony at these kids. I'm gonna get ya! I'm gonna get ya! And it's just, she plays creepy extremely well. And moves very well for an old lady.
What was the point of after that scene? She's walking away. I'm going to make chicken pot pies, and then her butt showing. Like, I don't understand
why they wanted to further cement that this lady's crazy.
She's nuts.
Okay. Because, yeah, she crawls from under the crawl space and looks at them. It's so fun. I'm going to make chicken pot pie. And she just turns around and walks away, and her skirt is tucked, I guess, into her waistband, and she's wearing no panties, and her nudity. This lady's pushing 70 something, had to be, and is naked a lot in this movie. Yeah,
she blinds the poor kid.
You tell them about that scene.
He just opens the door. There's noise outside the bedroom door. They're supposed to be in bed by 9:30. There's noise outside. He's like, I'm going to open the door. So he opens it, and there she's standing there completely naked, scratching at the wall. And then he closes it, and he's blind.
He turns, he's like, "I'm blind, Becky, I'm blind." And I love the character development in this. They do a great job building up the characters. You get a little in depth of every character, actually. Mm-hmm. Like the boy, you realize that he's acting out, but he has his fears. He's not as tough as he comes across. And Becky has some issues as well, all stemming from their father leaving them. But yeah, it's all around A+ from me. I like this one a lot.
Yeah, they did a great job with it.
And it's actually the same, like M. Night, of course, did this one and Split, but so did Bloom Productions, who does quite a few horror movies. I think they do Bloom Productions, they did this, and they also helped on Split as well. So it's good to see they continued that relationship. I'm not sure when this one came out.
The Visit came out
2015.
Yep.
Okay, so yeah, not long ago. But yeah, that's the Visit. Any more to say on this one? It's great. Like we said, the twist. She goes in the basement. They tell them not to go down there because of mold. But that's where real grandparents are, and all the pictures and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which was I thought a great reveal, and we got to see a nice little chase scene in the dark down there. There comes a point though. I point out to Robert, I was like, kids are dumb. Like, when they first find out, like, because they find out a full, like, half a day that these aren't their grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, kids are dumb. Because at that point,
you're
like, yeah, I'm out of here. I'm going to go, I'm leaving no matter what. Because just screw it. I'm just gone. I'm leaving all this stuff and putting down this camera, and I'm gone. I'm running down the road. They're old. They're not. She might catch them. I was gonna say they can't catch them, but she's pretty fast for an old lady. But yeah, the Visit. I recommend it.
Yeah, go watch it.
Go watch it. That'll bring us to Potter and Family promos.
This week on Now That I'm Older. Did you ever have any other place that you peed that you weren't supposed to besides the carpet?
No. Pee in the toilet like I'm supposed to. I don't know what the fuck is wrong with you.
when you're younger, the idea of a threesome and all that stuff is great. But as you get older, it's more like, I don't want to deal with that. That's just so much.
Who wants to deal with that time management?
This is open bar. It's my responsibility to get wasted.
So check it out this week at nowthatimolder.com.
Hey everybody, Mike Jolitz here. Hope you had a happy new year and you had a ton of fun. Anyway, on the next upcoming Mike Jolitz show, when New Yorkers say Merry Christmas, do they add fuck yourself automatically or no? Kanye dyed his hair. An idiot won the right to wear goat horns in his driver's license photo. Hillary got 2.9 million more votes than Trump. You still lost. Eat it.
Check it out, yo.
Grab him by the...
And we're back. We're going to go ahead and get into my favorite segment, trailers. I think, do you want to go first with me?
Sure, I'll go. Mine is Una.
UNA.
I saw this one. I was just basically looking at new trailers, and this one really caught my eye. It kind of reminds me of the movie Hard Candy.
One of my favorites.
Strange sort of way. Mm-hmm. Not completely, but there is I guess it's based off a play that apparently shocked the world, but I've never seen the play, so I don't know about it. But the trailer is basically this woman hunts down this guy who's changed his name because when she was younger, he had a relationship with her. And now she shows up to basically terrorize him and make his life a living hell. So that's what the trailer
is. I can see the similars of Hard Candy somewhere. Yeah, and so this is a new one coming out?
Yep, this is a new one coming out. It just looks... I like that when they take a... Like, basically, they take the guy who's, I guess... had the inappropriate relationship with the girl and then makes him the victim, which is what they did in Hard Candy, which is why I like that one so much. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to seeing this one. It's kind of a twist there.
Definitely look at that. Try to look that trailer out. I haven't put it out in a long time. Why we do trailers? I do trailers because trailers are kind of the gateways in the movies. They're the things that make you want to see, like, ooh, that looks great. In my opinion, just as important as the movie because they get you out there and get you wanted to go see it. Which brings me to my trailer, Free Fire. This is one that's done by Scorsese, I believe. But it's kind of in the same vein of the Snatch kind of Guy Ritchie films. These people show up to a drug deal and... a drug deal or a gun run deal, one of the two, and things go bad, and a gunfight happens, and the entire movie is this one gunfight, and it's kind of it reminds me of Smoking Aces a little bit as well, because you have all these interesting people who have all these skills, and they all know each other, and there's comedy mixed in, and it has Jimmy from Hardcore Henry, and, you know, who also did District 9 stuff, but... Yeah, it just looks like a load of fun. Have you seen the trailer for this?
When you said the name of it, it didn't pop into my head. But after you started describing it, I'm like, oh yeah, I saw that trailer.
Doesn't it look fun?
Yeah, like, it does look really good.
Yeah. So the idea of this whole movie is one gunfight in this one area. I'm very anxious to see how they do that and how they pull that off, and see him in a different character because he blew me away in Hardcore Henry. So. Yeah, and that's trailers, which will bring us to the actual main event, in my opinion, because I'll go ahead and get into it. We're going to do Split, and I'll go ahead and bring someone who's been away for a while to tell you who's in this movie, and he's a little upset at us. Yeah.
He's mad at us.
Welcome to Go Watch a Movie, episode 17. We're past that, Arnold. It's been 3 episodes in the new year, and you don't invite me. I hate you both. What are you thinking? Well, you know, We just kind of were going. We were going with the flow. We didn't want to... You're busy with the new Celebrity Apprentice replacing the president. Yeah, it's an honor to do so. You're fired. Yes. But you want to introduce this movie? No. No? I don't just get called when you want me to do a movie. I have things to do. You're fired and you're fired. I'm out of here. Oh, go watch The Apprentice. Don't plug other shows on our show. Oh, anyway. Split. M. Night Shyamalan, written and directed, starring James McAvoy and a Taylor-Joy? Morgan? Betty Buckley. Yeah, those are the main three stars. I guess main 28 stars, because James McAvoy puts on a freaking acting clinic. Go ahead, Robert. What are your thoughts on this one?
I loved it. I'm like, thank you, M. Night. You came back in a big way. You've let us down a couple of times. I don't want to dwell on the defeats, but he came back in a big way. And the ending, the way he connected it, you were talking about connections with the movies and Pixar. The way he connected some of his own movies together was just perfect.
Yes. Like, thank you. He makes... Like, because I was a little, the only part, the wall climbing, I was a little taken out. But then you throw on that twist at the end, and you're like, okay, this is that universe. This is all fit. But that also is explained well in the movie, I think.
Yeah. I didn't think the wall climbing was too crazy, because he basically just went up and to the side. He wasn't, like, literally walking sideways on a wall. So I thought it was
a semi-flat wall, though.
And there were some grooves in there, and they did explain it earlier in the movie, like, how he get in there somehow, figure it out, and do it. And if this was just like an origin story for a villain in that universe of the guy from Unbreakable, that was perfect. That was
yes. Like, yes. Like, in every way, I thought this was a return to form for M. Night, because, and James McAvoy, where have you been all my life? Like, I know you were good as Professor X. I loved you and Wanted. You know, just about everything I've seen you in, I liked you, but holy cow. Like, there comes a role in actors where you're like, wow, where was it? Like Heath Ledger, the Joker. I can go on, but this one cemented McAvoy in every way, shape, or form. Like, I loved every personality I got to witness of this guy. And then in this film, I don't know who the DP was, but they focused to just show every bit of emotion they could, and each character delivered that emotion. Like, wow. Yeah. one of my favorite scenes of the movie is when he was talking to the the psychologist, and she is on to him. She realizes he's not the personality that he is saying he is. And they are doing that whole zooming on the face thing, and he has this eye twitch. It's just kind of like, he's like, why doesn't she believe him if she's not this smart? It's just, oh, great. So Split, for those of you who may have not seen the movie yet or may haven't seen this trailer yet, this is a movie about a disturbed person with 23 personalities, and several of them are crazy. And they kidnapped three girls. They kidnapped these girls because they know, three of them for sure, know a...
Originally, I think they were only going to
take the two. Yeah.
But the third one was just an extra bonus, I guess. It was just
because that's another thing. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. You're right, because...
The opening scene?
Yeah, the opening scene. He's sitting in the car, and, like... His craziness, his so focused, that version of him is so focused, he only expected to. The fact that she's quiet, he just ignores her completely as he's cleaning up everything. Yeah. But yeah, he kidnaps them, and they are to be sacrifices, I guess, to put it bluntly.
I don't know if he said holy sacrifice, but they're sacrifices.
Yeah.
A holy sacrifice.
For this 24th personality, the Beast. Or aka the Horde, as they called him at the very end.
Yeah, they call him two different things. Yeah. Well, I guess the Horde was
all three.
All of them together.
Okay.
And then the Beast was just that one individual.
Yeah. But Yeah,
it was amazing.
That is a bland basic setup for this movie. It's not doing it justice because, and the critics, some of the critics were saying if it weren't for McAvoy, the script was blah and underacted. I disagree. I actually enjoyed the script as well as all the actors.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I'm getting tongue twisted here because there's so much flowing out of me. Yeah,
there's a lot going on here. But the only thing I wanted more of, my only complaint of the movie is I wanted more of the personalities.
Mm-hmm. We saw like 5, 6.
Maybe six.
Maybe six.
I wanted to see more of them because there was. He acted it so perfectly. Everyone was different. Everybody was unique. But the only thing that I didn't... The second thing I didn't like was when he was Hedwig. Mm. At first, I thought he crawled weirdly on the ground because he was that young and that short. But then he started walking at normal height.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little confused. I wanted him to stay at that...
That low level. Kind of the
but
top of
it. Yeah, but other than that... that
et cetera.
Was, yep.
He was probably one of my favorite characters.
I love the dance scene. The dance scene was the best thing.
I can only imagine how many takes they had to do because she looked like she was trying so hard not to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
But my God.
I just love when a movie just like, even if a movie doesn't have a lot of dancing in it, just randomly throws a dance scene in there. It's,
and he got completely silly. Like,
he was in it. He's good. I thought he was, I could have been, I'm not that good. Can you dance that good?
I have to admit, dubstep
type music.
Yeah, it was dubstep, and I was expecting some Kanye, but they mm-hmm. probably didn't want to pay the rights or whatever. Right. But still, it was awesome. There are so many great parts of this movie. And then, would you have a favorite personality of the ones we saw? Because technically, we can X out Barry because I don't think we ever saw actual Barry.
Other than on the recording. But I'd have to say the Beast.
The Beast was your favorite?
I like the Beast. If my second favorite would probably be the woman. What was her name? Miss Patricia.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie stuck. Like, I was laser focused in on this movie, and it just, like, resonated through me in every way. I think, I really like Dennis. I loved, he had this OCD about him, but he had this military formness about him as well. And then he had that damaged side where he had to kind of keep that in check. Like, the fact that this one man is just a dude, playing a dude, disguised as another dude, disguised as a woman, disguised as a 9-year-old little boy. But the fact that he is playing 24 different characters, and each of these characters has so much depth. Like, he's not just saying, oh, I'm a 9-year-old boy. Now, this character is a 9-year-old boy who is keeping it. He feels like he's not respected by the other peers around him, and he just is now being suckered in by these other characters to get respect. You have Miss Patricia, who... She doesn't really have as much depth, but she's kind of a ringleader. Did you see more depth in her than I'm giving her credit for?
Yeah.
But yeah, she's kind of
not really
like this mother hen, I guess, to all of them.
She did have a lot of control, though.
Yes.
I mean, for whatever reason, she was able to do control people the way she did
mm-hmm.
without really doing a whole lot.
Yeah. True. Because Dennis followed her orders, and you would think he was...
I felt like there was doubt in Dennis, though. I mean, he believed, but I think he was still struggling with it.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Patricia was dead on. She believed.
100% this was going to happen.
And had control. But, I don't know, just something about her just didn't... I don't know. But the Beast, for me, was just pure confidence.
Yes.
That's when he just reached... There was no doubt.
He knew, and I think that is something that he had to have... to become the Beast, mm-hmm. like, because you had to truly believe, your brain had to truly believe to go through this evolution. Like, this is what I am. So, and there is no doubt in that whatsoever.
To be able to take 2 gunshots
yes.
from point blank and not pierce the skin. The stabbing, I love the stabbing
And he, and that scene, like, that was amazing. And then it further get even more amazing. As he bear hugs her to death, you hear this spine snap and crackle and then pop.
Accelerate cracking. It's just
those gruesome. And then Barry, even though we didn't get to really see Barry, we got to see Dennis play Barry, but we saw Barry is this, I'm assuming, homosexual entity of him.
Yeah.
And like kind of fashion. Yeah. And that character, I enjoyed what we saw too, because he was all like, he knows all this is going on, but he's still like talking about the best fashion. And I am so having the worst day. If I didn't have this whatever t-shirt on, I would be a wreck right now, you know? But yeah, it was just fantastic. What do you think of Morgan, whose name I can't remember right now?
I thought she did a really good job.
Yeah.
Easy on the eyes.
Yep.
I mean,
except for those big anime eyes.
Yeah, the facial expressions were good. I mean, but I don't really have any complaints about her. I hate that's the whole
her setup to why she was how she was.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't like that, or
I did like it. It was just hard. It was just difficult. It's just one of those like awkward things in a movie that you don't necessarily want to.
Because it pulled you out of this awesome setup that we have.
In a weird way, I saw a lot of, like, I almost felt Stoker because it was the way the father was teaching the daughter to be a hunter, and that's what they did in Stoker. So I felt like he was training her, but then he died so abruptly, and then she was just being basically tortured by her uncle, and I hated that. I was like, what? But yeah, I mean, I did, but it just the whole flashback thing, I don't know, it just bothered me.
So the outcast girl he kidnaps has a her past, and it fits the movie. It
makes sense at the end.
Yeah.
Once you get to the end, it does make total sense.
The other two are these privileged, preppy girls who are getting a new car and who've never had to, work for anything in their lives, which is why he wanted them. Because the Beast wants, he doesn't believe you're pure unless you've gone through pain, right? Yes. But she, we slowly find out through these series of flashbacks that Robert was talking about, that she has in fact gone through pain. Her father died of a heart attack, but not before he would teach her the hunt and teach her all these steady things. And she was they got the cutest little girl to play her, the little curls and everything. But her uncle, who's the guy from Orange is the New Black, he's a big guard in the last season. He would molest her. And I'm assuming this continued throughout her high school life.
I'm thinking so. I'm trying to figure out if all those scars on her body were self-inflicted.
It's like cutting and cigarette burns.
Yeah, if they were self-inflicted or there was something to do with whatever he liked to do. I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
Did you feel at the end, sorry to jump in there, but did you feel at the end when she's like, your guardians, you're your uncle's here, do you feel like she told them finally, or do you feel like she didn't say anything?
It seemed like she told them finally, because the way the cop was looking at her, like, you should be jumping for joy right now. Why aren't you getting out of this car? And then she steadily kept looking, and, you know. But then they subtly threw in more and more, like, the whole, when Hedwig tells her, Dennis thinks she wears too many shirts, etc. He just kind of throws in little things, and she wore so many shirts because she was so scarred all the time, you know, and up, and yeah, it was just very, very cool. Jeez, I really like this. What did you think of the other two hostages?
I thought they could
just throwaways.
They were throwaways. They could be interchangeable with anybody.
Mm.
I mean, I liked how the one was clearly looking to everybody else to find
she
out.
She needed somebody.
She needed somebody. Yeah. And the other one was fairly confident, so that was okay. It gave some contrast between those two and then the main, what I consider to be the main girl. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that was, I guess, a little helpful, but overall, I think they could have been anybody. They didn't really count. They were just food for the Beast, basically.
Yep. Yeah. We instantly get that Morgan. And that's not her name. I can't think of her name, real name or name in the movie. But we instantly get Chelsea, something like that. We instantly get that she is confident in herself, and she notices things, because when they get abducted, she noticed that this guy's a neat freak. So she tells the girl who gets taken out of the room first, because he's about to go back. Dennis is about to go back into his old habits of watching girls dance naked, as we hear from the doctor. She tells her to pee herself, which he finds disgusting, of course, so he throws her back in the room and has to, I'm assuming, go scrub himself clean, which I thought was a cool little addition.
Which is weird, because I don't know if that fit Dennis, though, like watching, liking to watch girls dance around.
That was his vice, though. That's the thing. Like, he was that disturbed. Like, he seems all put together and in control, but he has this vice that he needs to, you know, he's this demented. You like
your yellow handkerchief?
Yeah. Kenan, The Visit, kind of was OCD and needed to germaphobe. If I didn't like Hedwig so much, Dennis would be my first favorite character. But I just think he did that kid role, like, it stood out to me. Like, I'm going to smack you.
And he does.
Wait. Did you think this was a real window to escape? Like, James McAvoy just probably catapulted to my favorite actor after this, like, because that just blew me the freak away. Like, I haven't seen someone just devour the scenery like he did in a very long time. And yeah, he demanded presence when he was on screen, no matter what character he was. And the fact that they focused on faces so much. When you watch this movie, you'll notice what I'm talking about. Like, the face was the focal point in just about every shot, and it was just so brilliantly done. Anything else you have to say? I can probably go on.
Run out and watch this movie, because it's great.
I mean, we could get to the Beast, like, because that one, like, when he literally becomes the Beast, he goes through this change. McAvoy kind of swells. He's already buff. Mm-hmm. He kind of swells himself up more. His pupils dilate, like,
His veins get really weird, kind of like hulky.
Yeah, his veins are glowing, and yeah, it's that. And then
they do explain earlier in the movie that, like, when a person has multiple personalities, they can change their body to appear. And he doesn't really change his body too much. He does change, like, he's capable of doing other things than he could before, but he didn't actually change. Like, his fingers didn't become twice as long as everybody else's fingers, which I appreciate not going over the top with that.
Yeah, because I was hoping they didn't, like, because Dennis at one point describes him, and he says he has a mane of hair, and his fingers are longer, and he's taller, which the first time they do show him, they do this shot, and it's, I think it's to highlight the veins, but, like, where he's always in the frame of the shot of the camera, you can see the top of his head. This one, it cuts off his head at the top, you know, when he first becomes a beast, to show that he is this bigger, more menacing thing. And
did you feel it was necessary for him to have to go on the train to become the Beast and then run back to the...
I think because it was in his... Like, that story, that progression of how the Beast becomes was so into his head, he had to act it out that way, like, to believe it fully. I think that's what he had to do. Because they tell the story of the Beast, and he roams the train yards and that sort of thing, and they all fear him. And then the twist, we already mentioned it, but
yeah, might as well.
The Beast escapes. Morgan is the only survivor, and we have his scene where he voices the trio are interacting, and then we go to this diner. And this girl is like, man, that guy's a freak. He's kind of like that guy in the wheelchair. And what was his name again? And then she leans back and we see a familiar face, old Bruce Willis, who says, Mr. Glass, connecting this world to the unbreakable world, which I just loved. Like, I thought that was great.
Yep, that was an amazing moment.
Now, will they do a third?
I would love to see it. I don't let Mr. Glass get out of prison
and connect with the
horde, and then have this huge. Yeah, that would be crazy. Awesome. But I don't know if they're going to do that or not. But that would be insane.
And to see the Beast go toe to toe with the unbreakable dude would be So I'm anxious for that. And we're missing stuff in this movie because there's other scenes where he flips through each personality after the name is said, but yeah. Anyway, I just go watch this movie. We're not doing it justice because it is amazing. So check this out. Go watch it. That was Split. which will bring us on to suggestions. But actually, before we get to suggestions, I want to go ahead and ask you your favorite M. Night Shyamalan movie.
My favorite M. Night movie. I'm going to have to go way back and say The Sixth Sense. I think they did that one the best out of all of his movies. And I haven't seen all of his movies. There's a couple that I haven't seen. The one mainly before The Sixth Sense. But, yeah, that one was definitely my favorite one. I think they did it better than anything else.
And because you truly didn't see it coming. Like,
there's no, you weren't familiar with M. Night.
To know.
So it was perfect. After that one, everything, I think, is trying to play catch up to The Sixth Sense. Because that one was so successful. It did such a good job. I mean, I don't think he can do better than that in his career. I don't think he's going to ever top it, personally. But that's my favorite. What's your favorite?
I'm going to say, and I'm not going to say, it's not on the same level as The Sixth Sense, because The Sixth Sense was that film, you know, and it's not topping the Shyamalan, the M. Night, which is that twist, but I'm going to have to go with Split. I enjoyed this movie so, so much. And it's mainly because of McAvoy, but the whole movie overall was good, in my opinion. I'm going to go with Split.
If you had a runner-up, what would it be?
Runner-up would be The Sixth Sense. Because I've heard people say, oh, I knew it. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think you did. I don't think you did. But, yeah. Which will bring us now to suggestions. I'll go ahead and go first here. Mine was Hector and the Search for Happiness. This is, I caught it on Netflix. I'm sure it's on other things now, but... Yeah, it was, Simon Pegg is in it. He's the main guy. He plays a psychologist who is now just complacent with his job, with all of his life. And he is realizing that he's trying to make these other people happy, but he's not really happy himself. So he goes on this kind of quest, this adventure for happiness, basically. And yeah, it just takes him through all kinds of things. Like, he leaves his girlfriend and his rich fancy house and all that stuff and goes to these third world countries and things like that to find himself and find happiness. I think it just kind of rings out to me. And there's the funny trailer for it where he's talking to this French lady and she says, "I am looking for happiness." She's trying to say happy. It's funny. But yeah, check that one out. Hector and the Search for Happiness.
All right, well, mine is... I'm going to go vampire on you. It's called We Are the Night. Now, I originally saw this one on demand. And normally, when you watch something like Comcast on demand, it's... Yeah, I don't want to say crap.
Yeah.
There's some crap on there. They don't put a lot of good stuff on there. But this one, I was like, what? This is good. So then I went out and found it because I wanted to watch it again because it wasn't on there anymore. I think it was like an IFC Midnight movie or something, if I remember correctly. I might be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. Feel free. But it was, I watched it again and still had the same impact. I thought it was great. It's a vampire movie basically about... It's a troubled girl who's kind of a runaway who ends up at a rave. I know this sounds familiar. And then there's some vampires there who all happen to be chicks. And then they take her in, make her a vampire. They all go out and do vampire stuff. But it's so much better than I'm making it sound. It sounds ridiculous when I say it, but it's so perfect. There's so many hints in other movies. There's like the whole vampire thing, like there's no guy vampire because they're just basically too noisy. There's just girl vampires. So they kill off all the guys. I don't know. It's just there's something perfect about it. There's so many poetic things, like the relationships, between all the different vampires. They're interacting with each other, how there's kind of one who's like in control trying to basically surround herself with all these ones that she likes, but then they kind of rebel against her.
Like surround herself? Wink, wink?
And it's just really, really good vampire flick. Mm. Outside of your normal. I don't want to, when your normal vampire flick, I know some of them, for me it's changed now since the release of things like Twilight.
Oh, God.
And
oh, God.
Things have, you know, slowly, and then there's TV shows that are really popular with the Vampire Diaries and all that kind of stuff.
But vampires have been glorified and turned into these sex symbols.
Just overdone and beat up. But this is kind of a cool, like, I don't want to say reboot, but it's just a cool retelling of like a vampire story. I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I thought it was different. So
what's the title again?
We Are the Night.
We Are the Night. Awesome. Check it out. I think that brings us to this week's battle. Big bad guy movie tournament thing.
The bam.
This week, if I'm not mistaken, puts The Architect from The Matrix against The Joker.
Yes.
From the specifically Dark Knight Joker, or just Joker all encompassing?
Specifically Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger's. All right.
This is going to be tough.
This is I really love Heath Ledger's Joker. I mentioned him earlier as. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I don't know even where to start. For me, Heath Ledger, God rest his soul.
Mm-hmm.
He
R.P. homie.
A lot of people say he didn't play the Joker correctly. I think he played him for this universe just right.
Mm-hmm.
I think he actually did him above just right. I mean, I was so blown away with how realistic he made a guy dressed up like a clown be a villain. And the fact that he didn't just want to be a villain, he wanted to be a different class of villain, where he's burning piles of money. I mean, he just played that character perfect. The Joker in general, I don't think is a perfect villain.
No.
By any means. But Heath Ledger played the Joker in The Dark Knight.
Because I think that interprets exactly what the Joker is. He doesn't have a purpose, but chaos. Like, this is, he says it perfectly, like, we're all like dogs chasing our tails, you know, mm-hmm. or chasing a car. If we caught it, we wouldn't know what the hell to do with it, you know. So he's like, just and he succeeds.
He has this like almost a noble evil plot.
Mm-hmm.
He does lose it at the end. Where
does he?
He does, because there's those two people on the, what do they call them, the barges or
but
the boats, and he's like, well. If they don't want to kill each other, I'll do it. I'll just push the button for him and kill one of them. That's where I think he lost it.
But I think that was a second tier plan to his main thing of that little push
mm-hmm.
of making Harvey Dent go this holy symbol of Gotham mm-hmm. go over the edge, because every man can be tainted, in his opinion.
But it was about a push. Mm-hmm. But when he pushed the people on the boats, it was the criminals that he wasn't able to push over the edge to actually commit the crime.
But that's what I'm saying, though. Like, I think that was just, yeah, that part kind of fell apart for him. But even as he hung there upside down, he was still full of glee because good old Harvey Dent failed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Harvey Dent, this badge, this shining light of Gotham, turned and could not be controlled anymore.
Die the hero, or
become
a villain.
Exactly.
Which was great, but I just loved everything that he did.
Forcing Batman to become the person that everyone hates.
The end of that movie, this is off of the Joker subject. This is more on Batman. But yeah, I just love the end of that. That whole speech where he's like, "I'll become a Gotham needs. They mm-hmm. don't need a hero right now. They need a Dark Knight."
This is kind of similar to my second pick, like his plot. This is mirror,
that
kind
is
of mirroring.
Very sweet. That is very sweet.
But I know I'm arguing for the Joker.
I know you're arguing for my pick.
I liked him so much. Like,
it's hard not to.
It's so well done.
Sir, the architect?
The architect.
What do you have to say?
Is in two of the most hated films of all time because the first one was so loved so much. But he had already succeeded. They were on the third. He was failing, but they had already turned us into batteries. We were literally batteries. He was pulling the strings for everything already. Neo was this anomaly, but he was the expected anomaly. It was bound to happen. He knew it. And most just walked through the door and reset everything and did what he wanted. But this one had that pesky old little thing called love in him. So it's, of course, changed things. But nevertheless, humans were still batteries. Like, we were still plugged. Most of us were still plugged in. And Neo does die in the end, sacrifices himself, quote unquote, for this peace. But, I mean, at any moment, the architect could just say, screw it. And, you know, but he was a machine and calculated. So it worked. You know, yeah, things worked out to where...
Do you think he failed over and over and over and over and over again because each anomaly, was that his failure?
No,
Was that the Oracle's, was that her success? Or was that his failure?
I don't think it was either. I think it was a misunderstanding. They didn't understand us, our free will. Like, he couldn't... Because the original Matrix was...
Perfect.
And he didn't get, like, why in the hell wouldn't these humans want perfect? But we are jokers. You know, we want that little unexpected chaos every so often. And as a machine, he just couldn't understand that. He couldn't comprehend that idea. So, you know, he made this imperfect matrix. But like computers... do tend, unless you're a Mac, but get viruses and get these oracles or, you know, anomalies that happen that are unexplained. So I wouldn't say it was a failure or a success. I don't know. I could
that,
be wrong.
That in and of itself, the fact that it was so chaotic, his own plan, his own master plan to control everything was so shifting because there were so many things outside of his control. He was just playing along within the lines of that chaos without actually having control. So he created this situation where he's saying, okay, we'll just reboot everything. And I'll keep doing this over and over again until I get it right, which he never does.
But that's the IT world. Like, it's, man, this thing is crashed. Turning it off and turning it back on. And that reboots everything once again. And now it's working for now. Like, that's computers. Mm-hmm.
Do you think he was a calculated villain, or do you think he was just a program following his program?
I think he was very much
because he wasn't an intuitive program. He was strictly just following a program. The Oracle was the intuitive one
that tried to learn.
Yes,
but I think he was very much Skynet. Like, I know what's best for these humans. They don't know what's best for them. Even though his best was just, here's your world, wipe out your little.
I'm trying to remember all the Matrix's movies are like flying through my head right now. So I'm trying to remember, like, so him as the architect.
Yeah.
The reason why humans didn't accept because it was perfect. Because so he had to but he had to use the help of the Oracle, that program, to create the world that was slightly flawed so that they would accept it.
He didn't need her help. He did that. She was just a part of that world.
She was a part of the world?
Yeah.
Wasn't she the... Wasn't the Oracle as equal as the architect?
That's what they say.
She was the intuitive part of the program, and he was the control part of the program, so she basically...
Cause and effect, like the Merovingian was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She was the cause, he was the effect, or something like that. Essentially, it boils down to... but I think the sequels are highly underrated, in my opinion. They give so much story in those two sequels. I know the first one is on the God pedestal, which it deserves to be, but those other two give so much filler and, you know, storyline. But yeah, it's, I don't know, like, I love the Joker. But I...
I don't know. I just see the architect leaning on other things so much.
I don't think he needs... Like, because he... Ultimately, he is the control. Like, if he wants to make... Wipe out everything, he can say everything's wiped out. He gave
but
her...
But he can't wipe out everything because he needs them for batteries.
No, that's what I mean, though. Like, he could just have us plugged in and keep the cycle going on. And this peace treaty, he could just say, okay, my machines are just going to destroy you anyway. He doesn't have to have a peace treaty just because Neo's there. Because he even says at the end of the third one, how long do you think this peace treaty is going to last? You know, like, so he could just start it back up again.
I struggle with the architect because I don't think he is as powerful as he appears to be.
Hey, I'm all for the Joker. Like I said, I was arguing for him. I think he pulled off exactly what I wanted to do. He had one slip up with the boats, but his master plan was to show the world that even the best of us can go bad.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened. Whereas the architect ended in a draw. So if we're going on those standards, then I'll concede for the Joker. I have no problem with it.
That's a tough one. I don't want you to just concede.
No. I have no problem with it. Like,
I can see both arguments.
Because I am spotty on the Matrix right now, whereas the Joker is crystal clear. But I know the Matrix did end in a draw with the architect and the Oracle. You are correct on that. Like, she was basically the yin to his yang, or whichever, vice versa.
I just feel like the architect's endgame was a draw.
Because,
and then a restart.
Because he
and then a draw, and then a restart.
It was... Well, before Neo, it was a play-out, destroy, restart. Play-out, destroy, restart. Then when Neo happened, it was a play-out, draw.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So yeah, I mean, yeah, he drawled. His plan did not go, and by definition, as you were pointing out to me, he has to have flaws for us to work for him the way we have to work for him. Like, otherwise, apparently, our bodies don't produce enough energy if our brains aren't focused enough on stuff. Like that's the whole reason of the Matrix, is to make our brains work to generate energy.
Mm-hmm.
So. If he can't make his perfect world, which was his original plan, is to give us a perfect world so that we generate energy, which failed, and he had to adjust. So, by definition, he loses. So, yeah.
Okay. I can't argue with that.
Yeah. But, yeah, I just think he's a super interesting dude. And I don't know. Do you hate the sequels? Or do you just
I don't dislike the sequels. I hold the first one way above the others.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy seeing what happens after.
Mm.
But yeah, it doesn't compare. If I could just watch the first Matrix is all I need. Yeah, I don't need the others.
It is fantastic. But yeah, go on. There he goes. Look at him go. All his craziness. That was the Big Bad Guy Movie Challenge. I think those were number threes?
Threes.
Oh, we're getting down to the nitty gritty.
These are going to be hard.
Yes. So the next tiers, when we finish this first tier, are going to be crazy. But you can find all the lists of our bad guys and the bracket on gowatchmovie.com. You can find our podcast on gowatchmovie.com. You can find our podcast on iTunes. You can find our podcast on Podomatic and just search Go Watch a Movie. You can find our podcast just about anywhere a podcast is played. You can also find us on Twitter, Go Watch a Movie, on Facebook, Go Watch a Movie. Just go over there and like, subscribe, leave comments, give us questions. Last week we did a suggestion episode where we watched a suggestion from a listener. We'll do that again.
Yes.
So if you guys have a suggestion, please let us know.
Just give us more.
Yeah, just give us more. We'll watch them. We have one sitting in the bank. Someone suggested
Killer Clowns.
Killer Clowns, yep. So we'll watch that one. We did have, I did a poll on Facebook and Twitter of favorite M. Night Shyamalan movies. Sixth Sense was pretty much hands down. Well, there was one Lady in the Water, my buddy Dusty. Lady in the Water was his. But yeah, you guys participate in those polls. We'll shout you out on the show, and we will watch whatever you guys want us to watch. That's episode 17. We got all M. Night up in here.
You'll understand that if you watch The Visit.
But I'm Kelvin.
And I'm Robert.
Go watch a movie.